Welcome to another Classic Rock Online podcast. In fact, podcasts are always online, aren't they? So that's a little bit of tautology. But this week, myself, Malcolm Dome, here with you once again. Jeff Barton, unfortunately, can't make it this week. I think he's dodging flying teapots or something of that nature. But Xavier Russell is.
Isn't Jeff going to a festival in Sweden?
Yes, Jeff actually, as we talk, is packing his bags, his Sainsbury's bags or something, ready to hot-foot it on the local kayak over to Sweden for Sweden Rock, which is this weekend. It starts, I think, on June the 9th. It depends when you're listening to the podcast, of course. We're just putting it into the real time as we see it right now. But it did give Xavier and I an idea, because we're going to talk over the next 20 minutes or so about festivals. And a lot of festivals over the years to get through, reminiscences, nostalgia and so forth, because, of course, this is the summer when festival fever seems to be bigger than ever, with High Voltage coming up, Download, Sonosphere, Reading and Leeds, God, Bloodstock, and that's all in the UK alone, isn't it?
Yeah. And we're going to be also looking at some American festivals, like namely Day on the Green, and
comparing
them and things like that. But let's go right back to the beginning. 1981, the very first Monsters of Rock.
No, 1980 was the first Monsters of Rock.
81 was the first one I went to, so maybe you better talk about 1980.
Well, no, actually, in a way, you're right, because 1980 was supposed to be a one-off when Rainbow headlined, and that was purely seen as a Rainbow outdoor show. It wasn't meant to be the start of an annual event, so 1981 was the start of the annual event.
Yeah, but 1980, was it still billed as Monsters of Rock?
Yeah, it was, yeah. But it was very much seen as Rainbow show, and that was, of course, the year that Touch opened, American band. Yeah. Infamous or famous for the fact that Doug Howard, their bassist, swallowed a bee on stage that year. Very good start.
Funny things being chucked up. We'll do those through the years. I didn't go that year because I didn't really like Rainbow that much.
Oh, well, you missed a goodie, actually. Apart from the mud. Unbelievable amounts of mud because it rained so much beforehand. And I think it was a little weird because no one thought of Donington as being anything other than some sort of strange field in the middle of the Midlands.
And with a little castle and an airport.
Little castle and airport very close by and a racetrack.
Yeah.
But who knew that 30 years later, and it is the 30th anniversary, It will become the iconic venue for rock and metal festivals, outdoor events.
And Donington really wasn't Donington unless it was raining, though, was it?
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing. You look back over the years and everyone thinks about the rain and the mud, but a lot of the years, actually, was quite sunny.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem was, if it rained for 2 or 3 days before the festival, it turned the field into a quagmire.
Yeah.
And that was the problem. Even if it was nice weather over that particular day, because it was only one day in Monsters of Rock in the 80s, the Saturday, third Saturday in August, I think.
That's right. Well, let's talk about the 1981, which was headlined by AC/DC, mm. Whitesnake were on the bill, Blue Oyster Cult, Slade, Blackfoot, and a band actually called Moore.
Yes.
I remember distinctly being backstage with Blue Oyster Cult, and they were handed these funny little commemorative plaques, which most of the bands
mirrors.
Were hand
yeah.
mirrors. And no, they weren't supporting the Mirrors album, but
no,
I remember Eric Bloom, he was in a livid mood because they were very upset at being only third on the bill. And they played a Duff set mainly because the drummer Albert Bouchard, literally a couple of nights before when the band were playing as the Soft White Underbelly
at the Victoria Venue in London,
Known. And he was replaced by the roadie, Rick Downey, the drummer.
That's right, because Uncle Albert, as we call him, walked out,
literally, he'd had enough. Because they're quite sort of a funny lot, the Blue Oyster
Cult.
Anyway, so they were presented these plaques, and Eric Bloom actually got his, held it, and just jumped up and down on it, like a little yo-yo. And I think the rest of the band followed suit, and it was a hysterical sight.
Oh, I think if they were trying to make a protest, it went completely wrong, because everybody just laughed and thought it was so ludicrous, and they didn't do themselves any favours. Yeah. They looked a bit silly. In fact, there was a picture in Sounds magazine the next week of Eric jumping up and down on the plaque, and with a suitably daft caption.
And I think it was also Slade were on before them, and they were fantastic.
Always were,
and a very, very hard band to follow.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that they had their roadie playing drums, they weren't in a good state of mind. It was just a bad day for them all round. Whitesnake were you, but Whitesnake, as they always are, and AC/DC were brilliant.
AC/DC-like.
Yeah.
That's true, actually. And the next year, 1982, was a personal interest to you, wasn't it?
It was. I'd been to see, I'd gone with Mark Putterford, who's sadly no longer with us. We'd been up to Queen's Hall in Leeds to see another. Well, it wasn't really a festival. It was a big band. It was Twisted Sister, Saxon, a band called Spider.
Yes.
And there's a couple of others on the
bill. Battle Axe, I think, were on the bill.
And anyway, I Putterford kept sort of nudging me, saying, give that band Spider a bad review. I said, well, they're all right. They're just a boogie band. He said, no, you've got to sort of really slag them off. I thought, no, I can't do that. Anyway, I didn't actually think they were that brilliant that night. And I actually said so in a review. Anyway, so there I am standing in the middle of the field, not backstage. And this was a hot Donington, because I distinctly remember I had a cloth cap with a journey badge on it. And four people approached me, and it was Brian Burrows and a couple of the Spider guys. And they said, are you Xavier? They knew I was. And they took my cap off, plonked three eggs onto my head, and put my cap back on and just walked away. I said, don't give us a bad review again. I just sort of stood there, couldn't believe it. And I wasn't cross or anything. That's all part of, you know, journalism. You've got to take the rough with the smooth. But I remember, because it was so hot, that the egg had actually stuck to my head. Because I had to take the hat off and then comb it out. And I don't actually remember a lot about that day. I think I just went and got drunk.
Well, actually, funny, I think it was 87, something similar nearly happened to me. Because I'd given IQ, the prog band, a bad review. And we were in one of the lugering tents backstage, the guest area. And one of the IQ guys decided to throw the remnants of his pint at me. But he missed me. And instead hit Mick Wall, who was not amused at all, as you can imagine, because it had nothing to do with him anyway. So Mick got very shirty about it and was threatening all sorts of retribution against IQ, who were very embarrassed and apologetic.
Did IQ go up or down after that?
I think they nearly went down, actually. But that was a nearly hit.
Yeah, and I think you'll agree with this, 1984 was one of the best classic lineups. Yeah. You had AC/DC, Van Halen, who had just brought out an amazing album in 1984. Ozzy, who was on the way up. Gary Moore, Y&T, and of course our friends Accept and Motley Crue. It was just a really, really
tremendous,
a very, very strong bill.
But some of those bands didn't see themselves justice. Everyone looks back at Y&T that year and actually says they weren't very good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I saw them the next year at Day on the Green in San Francisco. I know we're going to be talking about Days on the Green.
Yeah,
and they were brilliant in their home situation outdoors. Yeah. But at Donington, they were a little boring in 84, I thought.
Yeah, it was like they were a bit lost, weren't they?
And Van Halen weren't very good either. Because I'd seen them at the end of 1983 when they played in Vancouver. Yeah. On the 1984 tour. And the beginning of 84, not end of 83, yeah. I was over there covering Crocus the Kerrang, because Crocus in the studio. We ended up going to see Van Halen. They were fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But at Donington, I don't think it quite came off for them.
No, and again, the scene lower down the bill, the sound was always like wishy, muddy. And it always whooshed all over the place.
The
planes were coming over.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah.
You almost time it, like third band on always a plane due. So yes. I don't know, and all these bands that record these live albums with the planes going, how do you mix those out? Now, 85 was a good year. You had ZZ Top, Marillion, Bon Jovi, Metallica, Rat. And I remember distinctly, I actually was on side stage for Metallica. And it was halfway through their set when this pear was lobbed up and it went into Cliff Burton's bass bin.
Yeah.
He sort of turned around, smiled at me, looked at it, and the pear had already had a bite out of it. He picked it up, had another bite out of it, and lobbed it back out again. And I think you recall, was that the year of the pig head coming
up? Yeah, pig head was thrown on stage. I think that was during Bon Jovi's set, wasn't it? I think it was Jovi's set when it was...
Somebody obviously took an exception to him, didn't
they? Yeah, Jovi was third on the bill. And that was the year that Rat were opening.
Yeah.
And Magnum were just above them on the bill. And I do remember Stephen Pearcy saying, who are these old dudes above us on the bill? Because he couldn't actually get his head around the fact that Magnum were not exactly, you know, the youngest band in the world.
No.
And he'd never heard of them. Were above Rat, who in America, of course, were mega, but over here meant very little at the time.
Who was the guitarist? Like
Robin Crosby. Tony Clarkin, yes.
Like a sort of old granddad.
Yes, Tony the Hat Clarkin. But that was also the year that you were rather amused, actually amusing, to Robin Crosby.
Oh, yeah, dangerous but worth the risk. And he sort of looked at me like I was mad. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Yeah, so a lot of people. And of course, that was in those days, the hospitality area at Donington used to be full of free booze. It was always liggers pass into various tents.
And it was getting the different passes to the different tents. Yeah. The booze ran out. Or you used to run to someone and say, quick, there's only about 12 bottles of Guinness left in tent A. And you have to leg it across to that tent.
And I know that Phonogram, who are now Mercury Records, had a backstage tent because Bon Jovi were on the bill. And they were actually serving free tequila. And not just shots, pints of tequila. Oh, and I know from personal bitter experience,
man,
they were serving pints.
I cannot drink tequila. 1988 was an interesting year. You had Iron Maiden, Kiss, Dave Lee Roth, Megadeth, Guns N' Roses, and Helloween, the German band. And this was the year, unfortunately, because it was a wet one, two fans were crushed to death down the front.
Yeah, very sad. Total
during
accident.
Guns N' Roses.
Yeah. I wasn't there that year because that year we were putting together the first issue of Raw magazine.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was stuck in London. Dave Ling went up there.
Yeah.
And it was just a total accident.
Yeah. A lot of people were slipping in the mud that year and they reckon
yes.
they sort of fell down. There was a big crush.
Yeah,
towards
people
the front.
Crushing towards the front of the stage because GNR were just about really exploding as a very big band. And they were quite low down on the bill, I seem to recall, because it was Maiden, Kiss were on the bill.
Yeah, Maiden headline, Kiss, yeah. David Lee Roth, Megadeth,
that's right.
Guns N' Roses and Helloween, who
yeah.
were sort of like up and coming at the time.
Yeah, I mean, they just released Keepers of the Seven Keys Part 2.
And that's when Helloween had been taken over by Maiden's management,
yeah.
wasn't it? So that.
What was the sound like for Helloween that year?
Not brilliant.
Because the previous year, Cinderella had a great sound
yeah.
opening the bill when Bon Jovi headlined. Everyone put it down to the fact that Cinderella were proteges of Bon Jovi, so that Jovi made sure they had a really good sound.
But having said that, I found, because I used to not just go, I used to like to wander all around the different parts of the venue.
You did, didn't you?
Yeah, no, but it's not because you go out in the field, you've got to see it from the fans'
yeah.
point of view. And I found if you were in certain parts, the sound was very, very good.
Yeah.
If, say you're down stage right, or right at the back where they used to have all the free, not the free food, the food you buy.
That's right,
and
yeah.
all the tents and where you could buy funny old sticks and things and... up there the sound could also be good there, but then you'd have that wishy-washy sound, so it depended where you were actually in the field. I actually think you have to get the best sound, I always found, was to go slightly to the right and about halfway down.
You should have done your guide to the
guide
sound
to, yeah.
a sound
yeah,
guy,
guide
map
yeah, yeah.
or some a sort of sonic map or something like that. But of course we're talking about an era when it was a one-day festival.
Yes,
now of course you're talking about three-day festival and people go to download 2 days even before that. I think the camping opens on the Wednesday
yeah.
which is from where we're talking now tomorrow. So
well,
it's incredible. People go for virtually a week.
Because my first example of that was going back to a Reading festival in 1975 when Yes was headlining. I forget the other 2 days, but it was Yes, Supertramp
and
bands like that. And I had managed to get, as very early days when I knew someone at the Yes office, got a free 3-day pass. And it was literally a piece of card with a stamp
yeah,
on it,
yeah.
Yes. And I took a load of mates and they said, well, how are we all going to get in? I said, well, one of us has got a rucksack. So I got in, put it in the rucksack and lobbed it over. And then I've managed to get 5 people in that way. So they just gave me a quid each. And it was a very cheap but a good long weekend. And it was the first time I actually stayed over at a festival.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
it was a 3-day pass. Then it was something like 20 quid. Where now it's probably about £200.
Oh, yeah, of
it?
Course. I mean, it's gone. Its prices are so much higher these days as compared to the way they were.
Another big year was 91, wasn't it? Because you had AC/DC, Metallica,
yeah.
Motley Crue, Queensryche and Black Crowes. And there was one other on that bill as well.
No, I think that was it.
That was it. Black Crowes. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that was.
Was
the
Panteras on that?
No, they weren't on 91. No.
And then again, it's funny how you see how the bands work their way up the bill, because you got Metallica then headlining in 95.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting seeing how that. And the same with ZZ Top. You know, they.
Well, there were those situations where you had a band third in the bill, 2 years later they'd headline.
Yeah.
Whitesnake 81. I know Whitesnake 81 was second on the bill, but ZZ. In 83, then in 85.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi in 85 and 87, because
yeah.
they were thirds of top.
And then Maiden have always been.
Oh, Maiden have always gone there. DC have always headlined when they played there as well. Of course, they're playing Download for the first time, but it's not exactly their first time at Donington.
Yeah.
But.
When did you last go to a Donington? I haven't been to one for a
2008
few years.
I went to the Download Festival.
And did Download feel different to Donington?
No, it was longer.
Yeah.
Because it lasted 3 days, not one. And. In the days, of course, that we used to go in the 80s, there was one stage, 6-7 bands at most. These days, it's over 100 bands across 3, 4, 5 stages.
So you got the choice. Don't you find the sound leaks from...
Well, no, I don't think it does.
No.
It, because of the location of the stages, you don't have that problem. But I think the problem is that you now have so many bands going back year after year, and you say, oh, God, them again.
I know.
Whereas
do you really
in the 80s, there was a lot of... diversity, but then when you've got 7 or 8 bands on the bill, or 6 bands on the bill, you could afford that sort of diversity.
Because I remember one year I thought, right, well, I've sod these bloody coaches, they take forever. I'm going to fly up. And I think it was the year Aerosmith was quite, I think they were headlining it, or they're very high up the bill. And all the bands I wanted to see were actually lower on the bill that year, because I'd seen all the bands at the top
yeah.
of the bill. And I worked out I could get a flight at like 10 o'clock, get me up to East Midlands Airport midday, get to the site at 1. Start drinking, start seeing the bands, and then by the time I'd seen all the bands I wanted to see, I could get a 6 o'clock flight back.
Not bad.
And I'd have that horrible thing. I don't know if you've ever been at the end when it's getting out of one of those things.
Oh, it's a nightmare. absolute nightmare trying to leave those car parks, because everybody's doing the same thing. In fact, there was a tradition, you tend to leave halfway through the headlining band at one point in order to make sure you got out, get back to the hotel, get into the bar, because in the 80s, certainly in the Kerrang era, we used to basically stay up all night. It's almost like, why the hell have we got a hotel room? We're going to stay up all night anyway. Drinking.
Like, you know, labels like Atlantic always had these booze cruise coaches going up.
Yes.
So by the time you got up there, you think, where are we? What are we doing?
What are we doing here?
And then you all have to pile back on this coach at midnight, and it sort of staggers into London at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
You think, how the fuck am I going to get home now?
You do wonder sometimes.
Right, but is there any more on the day on the ground? Oh, also, you know, now it's download and stuff, do we not have all the prehistoric monsters on the sides of this? Because, you know, like on day, like when it was Monsters of Rock, there was always like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, do they still have...
They don't really have those sort of monsters anymore, no. They might have this year.
It's not the same, is it?
No, well, it's different. Yeah. Not the same, it's a lot different.
We could always have the Slayer Doctor Who backdrop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's another story.
Yeah.
What they might do this year, because it is the 30th anniversary, is they might actually put up a lot of the old school graphics from the 80s, were the monsters rock taking each other on.
Or something.
Yeah, something. And of course, there was in 87, and it may well have happened other years as well. Donington was misspelt on stage by Donington.
That's brilliant.
That D-O-N-N rather than D-O-N, which is an old mistake that so many people have made down the years.
Yeah, because you just think the two N's.
Yeah. But we've both been lucky enough also to do festivals outside of the UK, haven't we?
That's right. Now, the one of the best ones, and sadly it stopped in 91, and we'll explain why later, was this Day on the Green in San Francisco, which was put up by a guy, Bill Graham, major tour promoter in America. And the first one I came across was in 1978, which was Day on the Green 5. And let me also explain that because of the weather being much better out there, they could actually have more of these things. Quite often you'd have 5 Day in the Greens a year, stretching from early June, July. Sometimes you'd have 2 or 3 in July, and there's always one on Independence Day, which is natural. And they always took place in the Oakland Stadium, which is home of the baseball team, the A's.
Yeah.
And it's a very dodgy part of the world, Oakland.
Yeah,
it's
is,
a nasty
actually, yeah.
suburb. Thankfully, there is an underground train which goes from San Francisco under the bay, which you wouldn't want to be on during an earthquake.
No.
And it comes up the other side, and it actually stops the stadium, and it's a fantastic stadium, and it's one of those big, round
stadiums. It's a great stadium.
And wherever you sit, you always got a good view. And the backstage facility was a bit smaller than, say, Donington, but it was more concentrated, and there was better supply of booze and whatever.
Yeah,
but you
had
to know which bands to get the booze off. And the first one I went to featured Ted Nugent headlining, Blue Oyster Cult, Journey, AC/DC, and Cheap Trick.
Not a bad bill, really.
And that was September the 2nd, 78. And I hadn't really seen Journey outside there, so that was the interest of going there. AC/DC were at their... Power Age had just come out.
Power Age, 78, yes.
They were absolutely fantastic, and they were just really getting big. And Journey had a real tough time following them, even though it was Journey's hometown. And Steve Perry had only really just beginning to come through.
He was, wasn't he, in the 78, yeah.
Blue Oyster Cult were very good at that point, and Spectres, I think, they were promoting then. I think it was Spectres.
Yes. I think you're right, yeah.
And then Ted Nugent was just... Ted was at his peak at the time. And I remember he came on in a loincloth. And it was all prehistoric. They had these big prehistoric boulders. And then he was actually throwing raw meat out into the crowd and people eating it and then throwing it back.
Didn't Wasp do that a few years later? I wonder who they got that one from. Yes.
And the sound was good for most of the bands on that bill. So I actually do... You could walk out and you could go out and... You never... Because it was in that natural... arena.
Amphitheatre then
the next one was a July 4 one, which had Sammy Hagar again because it's his hometown. Very, very good. And Blue Oyster Cult always seemed to pop up on these bus, and again they were second on the bill that day. REO Speedwagon,
now we're talking.
Yeah, and they were obviously had the big hit then. They were on the bill, and Triumph. Local guitar god called Randy Hansen, who was very like...
Jimi Hendrix.
When we'd just been playing some Robin Trower earlier.
And
it's similar sort of just amazing guitar. So it was like a 40-minute guitar solo.
Yes.
But very good and well done. And then the next time I went was, again, it was the same year. Journey were headlining this time because they were very... They just got big
what
in 1980.
The first time
I'd seen them was 78.
Yeah, so we're talking about 80, yeah. Just before Escape.
Just before Escape.
They'd already had big hits in America.
And Cheap Trick... Molly Hatchet and Black Sabbath. Now, Molly Hatchet had gone on before Cheap Trick, And Cheap Trick was very big at the time, but knows that southern bands outside, outdoors, when they start when they start doing those 40-minute guitar solos, and when they did the classic Boogie No More, they did a 25-minute version of it.
Woo!
And Confederate flags absolutely everywhere, and Cheap Trick played about half an hour. You could just, you know what it's like when you're at a band, because how do you follow that?
You can't follow that.
Despite how good Cheap Trick were. And then, of course, Journey had an amazing fireworks show at the end of there, so
they
went to town on that. Then the next one I went to was 1981, which is another good one. You had Heart headlining.
Mm.
Oyster Cult again second. They could never headline a Down the Drain. It's like getting to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Travers, who was popular both here and then Loverboy and Ozzy Osbourne. And that's the first time I saw him with Randy Rhoads.
Oh, so Ozzy was bottom of the bill.
Ozzy was opening.
Good grief.
With Randy Rhoads. And they were fantastic. And Randy was really, really good. And he used to wear those
tremendous guitars.
And then the next one, which was a non-metal one I went to, actually, was 1982. It was The Who headlining, The Clash and T-Bone Burnett.
That's an interesting combination.
And that was in October, so it's a bit cooler then. So they only had like three bands on the bill.
Ah, right.
But The Who were very, very good.
Well, they normally are.
And then Then in 83 is another good one here. Journey again headlining, Triumph second.
Ah, yeah, they were massive in America.
Eddie Money. Do you remember
Eddie Money, yeah.
And Brian Adams and Night Ranger. And Night Ranger did get quite popular then. But I remember Brian Adams actually chatting to him. He said, watch this. And he'd just literally been on. So he put his pass away. And we actually went out into the middle of the arena, walked around, looked. We were watching Eddie Money at the time. And then we got back. I said, nobody recognised you. He said, no, that's what I like about being me. It's like the faceless man of rock. Yeah. But he'd done a good set. He'd gone down well. But the fact he could actually put his pass away.
Just go out. No one bothered him.
Absolutely nobody bothered him, which was great. And then then there's one in 1985 that you went to. Which I think you should talk about. That was August the 31st.
God, you got the date. That was Scorpions headlining. Rat were on the bill.
Yeah, Y&T.
Yes, Yngwie Malmsteen and Victory and Metallica.
Yeah, yeah.
Metallica were quite low down, weren't they?
Yeah, they were they were third on. You had Victory. Was it Rising Force?
Victory, then Rising Force, then Metallica, Y&T, then
Rat,
Y&T.
Scorpions.
Yeah, I mean it's a very strong bill. But what still stands out for me backstage is when the Scorps went on, they got a limo from their dressing room to the stage, 50 yards. Literally got in a limo and drove to the stage.
And have trouble walking.
Yeah, I think they did. Rock stars behave like that, apparently. The wacky German approach. And that was just at the time Sammy Hagar had been announced as joining Van Halen.
Right.
He turned up with Michael Anthony. In fact, I wonder whether he'd... Maybe it was just before he was confirmed in the band, but he turned up with his very silly-looking haircut.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh, dear, this is very silly. But the backstage facilities were very impressive.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, the Oakland Stadium was a tremendous natural amphitheatre for the sound, and the backstage was really well set out. It was a great day.
Amazing food decked out as like Hawaiian cocktails.
And Metallica were in very relaxed mode. And I remember Lars being very upset because the other three members of the band all had girlfriends there. And Lars saying, hey, why is it I can't get a girlfriend? And there was a comment from Cliff Burton along the lines of, grow up, you silly little man.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is very funny.
But sadly, the Day on the Greens came to a sort of end in 1991. And it was the last proper one. I mean, they did do one the following year to celebrate Bill Graham. He died in it's similar to like the Lennon Skinner thing. He died in a helicopter crash the day of the actual one which Metallica were headlining with Queensryche, Faith No More.
Weren't Blois to Carlton the bill second again?
No, they weren't. They couldn't get on that year. And it was like tragic because that festival was so well run when he was doing it, and obviously they felt they just couldn't keep it going, or there was some reason
Maybe
or a legal reason.
To.
But I'm very sad that they don't do it. But everyone I went to, I remember, I was always very impressed.
Well, there were so many festivals. I remember going to festivals in Belgium, Holland, all around Europe, around the world, I mean, Canada. And the fact is, it's still something about Donington that made it special, even compared to the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
It became so iconic that everybody wanted to play there. Everybody wanted to go there.
Yeah.
Because I don't actually know how it managed to do that.
I don't know. It's the Monsters of Rock, you know.
It suddenly went from being this sort of annual event that we Brits sort of like going to being the most important festival in the world, and every band wanted to be on the bill. And in fact, even now, when you talk to bands who made it onto the bill after many years, they say they grew up with the legend of Donington.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was always the one place they were desperate to play at because you'd made it.
That's right. I mean, but it's weird because he's still, like, over the years, like, I went to the big thing in Wembley where It was Elton John winning the Captain Fantastic album. Everybody gone to see the Beach Boys because they knew. And then also the Eagles were on the bill, and that was the day that, because Joe Walsh opened.
That's right.
And on Stackridge, it was about, I think they opened. Joe Walsh came on and did his set. No, maybe it was another band. But there was another band before Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh came on, did his set. Then the Eagles came on, and then halfway through the Eagles set, it said, "We got a special guest now." And
out came Joe Walsh.
And then he announced that he's virtually about to join the Eagles. And the Eagles were fantastic that day.
Yeah, tremendous band.
And I don't know, and Elton John made a mistake of playing the whole of Captain Fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's a bad mistake when a band does that, or an artist does that with a new album.
And also, like we say about Donington, like Nebworth became quite a big thing.
Yeah, but Nebworth was a very big deal.
Let's not forget, like, the Stones, when they were there.
Floyd did it, Genesis.
And remember Skinner supporting the Stones, and virtually not blowing them off, but going down extreme well. And also, when Zeppelin played, when Chaz and Dave were on the bill.
Well, that's also true, yes. Let's not forget that one.
Yeah.
Chaz and Dave. But Zeppelin did two Saturdays, didn't they? They didn't do 2 days in a row. They did one Saturday and the following Saturday.
Which was a different
way of doing it. Different bills as well. New Barbarians played with them as well.
That's right.
Keith Richards and
Ronnie
Wood.
And the Isle of Wight Festival.
Yeah, I never went to the Isle of Wight, actually. Never been. Have you?
No. Well, when I was very small, that when the Hendrix was doing the one, that Hendrix, we were actually my granddad were on a boat sailing around the stone, and I could hear it, but I couldn't actually see it. So it was bizarre. I never actually got to the Isle of Wight to see it, because I was too small anyway, but I was in this boat. But I remember actually hearing it, and I remember hearing these amazing guitar solo, because it's one of the sound where it really carried.
Right.
And we were on the right side of the island where you could actually hear it. So in a way, I did go to the Isle of Wight Festival, not actually on the Isle of Wight.
You actually heard Hendrix playing live.
When I was quite small. Didn't quite see it, though.
Not going to get a chance now.
And then, of course, you know, I've been to like other ones abroad. Like, it was weird. I went to Bowl when Bon Jovi was headlining.
Oh, yeah.
And Van Halen, or Van Hagar, however you want to call it back then. And it was in Bowl Football Stadium. And it was weird. You had a telegraph pole, you know, one of the big electric ones, going halfway through the stadium, very healthy. And then you had the stadium at one end. But it was bizarre because the ground was such an odd shape. You spent more time looking at the shape of this ground than the bands that were on the stage. And also, you find that different European audiences act different ways. They're not like Switzerland, it's all very laid back. And it was very polite applause in between each song. And you thought, God, I wonder what the bands actually make of this. Because no one was actually going ballistic like they do maybe in Germany more, where I've been to festivals.
Or Greece,
there.
Or Belgium, or Holland. Because
We
went to the Artshock Festival in Holland in 87. Now, admittedly, that was an indoor festival early in the year, but it was still a festival. And that was insane.
I know. And I've been to a couple in Germany where you get these bands like Creator and Helloweens and Destruction. I went to an all-day one of those once. And it was like one guy actually had a plaster on his leg. He'd obviously broken it in three places. And he still got on stage and still slam-dived off.
Yeah, that's
but
the spirit.
It's weird. In Germany, it's like the security don't care. It's like they actually let them go up and dive off. Then, of course, you know, that's probably how he broke his leg landing on somebody.
Yeah, I'm not sure if these days they'll do it because health and safety and the threat of lawsuits.
Yeah.
But the weirdest one I ever went to was Iceland. I think it was 1990.
Was it cold?
It wasn't cold because it was during the summer, so it was virtually 24-hour daylight, which is strange in any way. Thunder were on the bill, Choir Boys, Poison were playing, bands of that ilk, and honestly, the crowd were actually totally drunk, every one of them, at 11 in the morning, completely drunk. But I suppose you were dealing with 24-hour daylight, which is what they were, then the only way of dealing with it was to be completely off your head. Yeah. But that was just a strange day, because I never seen so many drunk people so early on in the festival. But they didn't actually get worse, it just maintained a level.
And that reminds me, what was the year Live Aid? Was it 85, wasn't
85.
It?
85.
When they had Live Aid on, the metal world got together and said, we don't want any of the Live Aid, because they didn't agree with any of the bands on the bill. So I went to this thing called Metal Aid in San Antonio in the Sunken Garden. It's when Lex Diamond headlined it.
All right.
And it was fantastic, because basically down in Texas, if you're not an American, you're a Mexican, and Mexicans love their metal.
Oh yeah!
And it was one of these natural amphitheaters, and they had a little tiny screen so you could see the other aid thing, but nobody looked at it at all. And Lex Diamond were like not very big anywhere, but they were massive in Texas.
Yeah, the San Antonio was particularly big, but I remember that.
And there was like 20,000 people there who didn't give a thing about the other aid, and they just wanted to see this metal aid.
Yeah.
And it went on till midnight, and it was like very raucous, very noisy. And it was just a totally different vibe from what was going on elsewhere.
Oh,
in the world. It was quite weird.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see all the different cultures were. I mean, I've never been to Australia. I could imagine them being pretty down
there.
I
think an Australian festival must be something to behold, definitely. Or a Greek festival, to be honest.
Yeah. And of course, the Nordic countries love their metal so much.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a global thing.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see this Dubai Desert Rock Festival, which happens every... I think it's March now.
Yeah.
In Dubai. And that must be a little bit of an experience, seeing a festival in the Middle East.
Is it by the Formula One Grand Prix track? Is it?
No, oh, no clue. No.
Sorry, it's something.
It's somewhere in the desert.
I mean, then you get these weird one-off events, like I'd love to have seen the Grateful Dead at the Pyramids.
Oh, that must have been something.
Because you go for the experience, it doesn't matter whether they're good, bad, no, it's just you're seeing this band playing right in the middle of the pyramid.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know people who did go and they say it was absolutely just a mind-blowing experience.
Or you two and Red
Gene
Rocks.
Michael Jarre, when he did that thing on the Thames, and he does those... Yeah. Incredible things.
Although they're not, I mean, they're festivals, I mean, they're events
they're
rather
not really
than festivals.
But you could almost say, because it's such a big thing, it's a huge outdoor event, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
And I suppose once you get more than two on the bill, you could call it a festival.
I don't know, how do you define a festival? These days, I think a festival is defined by how many days in one place.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you look back to the fact that Monsters of Rock Festival happened from 1980 all the way through to 96, with a couple of years missed out, and yet... it was always a one-day event, so...
Yeah.
But then does a festival event become a festival, or become a festival?
Well, it's like, well, you know, this Fairport Convention have got this three-day thing coming
up. Yeah, they do every year.
Yeah, status quo is on the bill, and you think, hang on, what's status quo doing on a Fairport Convention bill? And they obviously vary the lineup.
Yeah, so crop ready.
So
and one of the other great festivals happened end of the 90s, early into the 21st century, and it happened for three or four years down in Kent, a Canterbury festival. And that was brilliant. It was really relaxed, really nice, very pleasant. Lots of proggy-type bands and older-type bands. And it was held by an orchard. No one ever touched
a cherry orchard.
No one ever touched an apple or a pear or anything.
No cider.
I know, it's quite remarkable. In fact, the police were quite stunned because there was never any trouble. In fact, they turned up to the festival with nothing to do because everyone was really well-behaved. And the last year they did it, Robert Plant headline, remember Jerry Ewing? Of blessed memory.
Yeah.
He and I had gone down there the previous year, and we had a great time, even though there were problems with the hotel, but that's another song story. Jerry, so I remember Jerry saying, oh, with Robert Plant on it, will you watch this security? It's just going to go to the roof. It didn't. It was really relaxed, and as relaxed as ever. And one of the great memories was being in our hotel afterwards, and Dave Ling was there, and one or two other people, and Robert Plant turned up in reception carrying his own bags and politely queued to check in. And there was this moment when Dave Ling exclaimed rather louder than he thought, good grief, Percy's carrying his own bags.
What did Percy do?
Not sure if you heard it, but a few other people did. Roy Harper was playing that year as well. And it was actually a really nice, relaxed festival. I think it lasted 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, the promoters went bust. Such a shame, because it was really such a great atmosphere, family atmosphere.
Yeah. The only one where I've been to where I felt the atmosphere was always slightly edgy was the Bulldog Bash.
I've never been there, so...
Because of who it's sort of run by. And you always say, although there was no trouble there, because it's sort of run by the Angels, or they sort of helped put it on. They're always about, and they're sort of like, they look at you. But the bands were great. You had Saxon Motorhead. It was a Saxon Motorhead one, I believe, and it was about 80-something, and it was this funny old airfield somewhere in the Staffordshire or something like that.
Yeah, it is, yeah. They have it every year.
But it felt more like a motorbike event, because everyone's going, oh, they're on their bike, with a band that happened to be on stage in the background.
Yeah, but they combine that really well, don't they?
They combine it well. So if you're into motorbikes and stuff like that, and seeing bands like Saxon and Motorhead, it was good. But it definitely did have a different sort of flavour to it.
Yeah, it would have done.
Whereas Reading's a bit like Donington. Everybody's always gone to a Reading festival.
Oh, yeah.
But because you've got the 3 days, they never make the 3 days the same. So you can't say it's going to be a metal year. I mean, those are metal days, but they're not all dominant.
I mean, I think Reading went through a phase when it really collapsed in terms of the quality of the bill in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah, because in the late 70s, I mean, it started getting you had your Aerosmiths, your Ted Nugents, your Molly Hatchets, and they really did mix up the American and the English bands very well.
Yeah, they did. And then the Wobbam years, which they did really well, and then suddenly they seemed to run out of steam in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
And got it back in the 90s when grunge came in and found their niche again.
You can't put your Eurythmics on at Reading, can you?
No, you can't really.
That's the sort of 80s. No. Well, you can, but...
Well,
we
just didn't have any sort of thing to hook onto.
No.
And Donington was taking all the metal.
Do you remember Slade came back? And they
1980. Absolutely.
I mean, that's when the festival's all about. And I've seen the film footage of it since as well.
Tremendous performance.
It was brilliant.
Well, that was the year that it was Slade's last, supposed to be their last gig.
Yeah.
Ozzy had pulled out. And so somebody said, do you want to do the gig? And they said, yeah, all right, we'll do it. They thought that's it, over. No one cared about them anymore. Long past their sell-by date. And they turned up, carrying their own guitars.
Yeah, yeah.
Went on stage and just blew the place apart. Because, of course, what nobody remembered is that every kid out there, metalhead, had grown up with those songs. And were every word to every one of them.
Yeah. And it's such a sort of chant-along band.
And Def Leppard tried to follow them and couldn't.
Yeah. That's why, you know, bands like Twisted Sister always did well at those
bells.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I mean, it's shout it, sing it, and, you know, response back.
And you want to go on, you want to actually know the songs, have a good time, get into the spirit of it. And when you've got bands like Twisted Sister doing all their hits, all the songs you know, Perfect festival material.
It is.
So let's hope that everyone who goes to Donington this weekend, may well have already happened, depending when you're listening to this, has a great time. And I know there are so many other festivals coming up during the summer. I'm sure with Jeff back on his kayak from Sweden Rock to talk about Sweden Rock, which he's been to now. This will be the second year, I think, he's gone. So he'll have a lot to say.
Who's playing on that one?
Oh, there's a lot of crossover. But you've got bands like people like Rick Springfield playing and Aldo Nova playing, who don't come here.
Yeah,
Triumph.
Sweet.
They've done it in the past and don't come. So
because Doc Holliday's going to some big festival in Finland in the summer.
Poison.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bands who go into European festivals yet never make it to the UK. Wacken, the same in Germany, which is in August.
Yeah,
another
yeah.
festival that get a lot of bands on the bill who don't come over to here. And, of course, that's another argument as to why they don't.
Yeah.
But I'm sure with Jeff Batt, we'll talk a lot more about Sweden Rock.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
maybe the difference between the way they approach it and the way we approach it in the UK. And, of course, in July, the High Voltage Festival coming up.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
And then, is that the two-day one at Victoria Park?
24th,
so that's quite interesting
July.
Because you've sort of got a rocky day and a proggy day.
Well, I think the other interesting thing is you've got bands on that bill who've never been on festivals before. Because one of the things you said, oh, God, here we go again. More bands we've seen before on the festival bill. But you've got, firstly, ELP.
Yeah.
Maybe for the last time, who knows? Then you've got bands like The Reasoning, Touchstone, who you don't see on festival bills anywhere else.
Well, even like for Foreigner over here, you'd never see them. And I mean, you may in Germany and often in America, but never here.
No.
And they're down two down from ZZ Top. And then you've got, who else is on that? You've got Argent, is it? No.
Argent are playing, Backman and Turner playing.
Yeah.
Here Are Heap doing the whole of Demons and Wizards. Martin Turner's Wishbone Ash.
Yeah,
I've got so many exciting bands.
Marillion,
yep. Yeah. Which spans. Then you got Clutch. You got Down.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of really.
But
exciting
again, then
bands.
We got different stages for certain bands.
Yeah, metal, prog, classic rock.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be a fantastic festival. I'm sure we should talk a lot more about that. But I think the pubs are open, so we should go and have a luger.
Yeah, I think we should.
And get in the spirit for festival fever.
Yep. Get your bottles out.
Bye. Bye. We'll see you next time.